coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello everybody, and welcome back to an amazing live Tuesday night here at Curious Realm. I am, if you cannot tell from my color, fresh from the tropics. I got home at about 1 o'clock this morning from my client trip to Hawaii. Everything went fantastic. Couldn't have asked for a better show, and I was very, very excited all day today as I sat around prepping gear for South by Reynolds, things like that, about the show tonight, because we have two of my favorite guests. In the second part of the show, we'll be talking with Jason McLean about not only portals and portal technology, but the idea of portals, period, and how they have come into the community, how they've changed the community, how many of these hot-button topics like portals cause discussion across numerous communities and either bring them together as differing communities with a common topic or lead to separation within a community. It's pretty fascinating. So that's some of the exploration after our commercial break. With our good friend Jason McLean, we'll also be talking about his upcoming show in Missouri, the Crossing Realms Conference that we will be there for. So all kinds of great topics and guests there. Our guest in the first part is our good friend Billy Joe Kane. Billy Joe Kane is the founder of Radical Empathy Education Foundation. Their stated mission is to help build empathy in our world using virtual reality technologies. We first ran into Billy Joe Kane, geez, in our incarnation as Dudes and Beer many years ago at Classic Game Fest here in Austin. And hello Billy, it's been great to see the technology that you utilize, because here's the box itself. This is one of the seed kits that you seeded to me. And it's now on the HTC Vive. When I first met you, it was a rigorous process of setup, all kinds of teaching people how to use wands and how to interact with VR. And now the fact that it's in this packaging makes it so much easier for people to navigate the software, for them to get involved with the software. And we'll be getting into what the software is really all about. A lot of the new ways that you're flexing the software. And how did you first come into this world of teaching empathy through virtual reality, Billy?
Chris, man, thank you so much for having me on again. I love being here. I love reaching out to your audience and getting a chance to talk to people that have some broad minds about what's really going on in the world. So When I started making video games in 1992 on Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis, I was working for a company called Origin Systems. They had just gotten purchased by Electronic Arts. So I wound up getting a chance to work on everything from the very first version of EA Sports Rugby to Wing Commander to Ultima. So I learned how to make role-playing games, learned how to do sports games. And over the years, I learned that one of the things that's really important about making a product on a piece of hardware is that you want to make a product and an experience that makes that hardware come to life. You want to use what's really cool and unique about that hardware. So for instance, on a DS, you want to have it where you're using the stylus on the screen, or you might integrate the microphone that's on it. It's like you can blow into the microphone and it'll blow out a candle inside of the game. So you want to utilize the hardware's superpower to make the software feel more interesting and cool, right? So yeah. Long story short, in 2016, I had been making games inside of virtual reality. And I realized that there was a story that I wanted to tell to create an educational experience. And what I wanted to use was the immersion level of virtual reality to put you in the shoes of someone so you could see what a day in their life feels like. So empathy can actually be brought out in virtual reality for, you know, by a number of different ways. One of them is that you've got somebody completely enclosed inside of that headset. You've got complete control of what they see. You have complete control of what they hear, and you have complete control of what they feel. So their body, as they move around, they're getting the kinesthetic experience, and they're seeing that play out. So they feel like they're actually in that world. So what we did was we created a virtual reality experience called Trapped, a VR detective story. And the idea is that you're going to spend a day in the life of a young girl, and you're going to find out how it was that she was manipulated online by a professional predator to trick her by using her emotions and using her feelings to basically be in control of that girl. So it's about human trafficking, but the story really includes everything from divorce, abuse, abandonment, pregnancy, STDs, all kinds of things. And so as the story goes along, you actually feel like that story is actually happening to you. Chris has some footage. Here we go. So yeah, so one of the things that we learned when we were doing this was that people have a real hard time for the very first time they've ever used virtual reality. So we had to simplify the experience so that you just have that little red dot, and you're moving the red dot with your head. And so you activate things by looking at them. And one of the other things that's really cool about VR is you can get a sense of experience and a sense of being somewhere. So what we did was we made sure the very first area that you go to is that outdoor area. So you see the suburbs and you see the trees and you see cars. And so it feels really cool because it's outdoors and it's bright and sunny. Well, the thing about VR and the thing about telling a story is you want to take people on an emotional journey. So one of the very first things that we do is we want somebody to feel like they are caught in an area that they cannot leave. And so we put you inside of a small condominium where you are literally trapped. You can't leave. And she tells you the version of how or why all that stuff is the case. But I think that's pretty much that's the basics of it. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to put somebody in an emotional journey so they can actually feel like they will understand how this could happen to anyone through no fault of their own. And people that go online, they're looking for friendship, they're looking for companionship, and that's exactly what Lisa, our protagonist, goes through. She goes online and she meets somebody on the internet, and that somebody starts promising her nice things, promises that he likes her, starts taking her out on dates, and he buys her expensive things, and then later he extracts what he wants from her. And I don't want to give the whole story away, but basically he becomes in control of her by using her emotions against her. He threatens her, he coerces her. And so kind of taking a step back, this tool is used to teach psychological manipulation and coercion in any setting in the world. And it gives you 20 minutes of nonstop interaction with the survivor of human trafficking who explains exactly how this happened to her. Well, and it's one of the things that people that get this training, they never get this kind of level of depth of training. Go ahead, Chris.
And, you know, that is what I have been just in love with since I have met you, Billy, is not only the progression of the technology that you use, but literally the way that you have branched out with the technology use and the many different ways, because yes, it started with, hey, we need to teach junior high and high school teachers and facilitators, things like that, that like human trafficking is happening in your school. It's not in your backyard. It's not in your backyard. No, like there is human trafficking going on in your schools, in your school district, things like that. And to know that you have taken it from that to the point of labor trafficking. Yep. You know, and beautifully, and literally in the time that I've met you, right up around the time that I met you was when I first started a lot of my travel work, things like that. And since then, like now I see signs in bathrooms at hotels for human trafficking, things like that. So fortunately there, and now we have laws. When we first started, like laws were just beginning for human trafficking. And now we see them, and not only that, but we're seeing them being flexed So it's great and fantastic, but there's still a whole world of horrors out there, sadly. And that's what you have beautifully refocused the technology in this program on, is the idea of labor trafficking, the idea of how even communities can change themselves and catalyze themselves to change by building a new world of empathy across generations.
Yeah, you know, it's what's interesting about the training that's happening nowadays is people are getting training on what human trafficking is. They'll learn that there's an action, there's a means and a purpose. They learn what all those things are. But basically, an action is that you have control over somebody. A means is that you're actually using them for sex or for labor. And the purpose is for commercial benefit. So those are the three parts of what human trafficking really is. But the thing is that most people that are in this field, police, whether they're in any form of law enforcement, whether they are a legislator, whether they are a prosecutor, what they understand is the legal definition of trafficking. But what they really don't understand is the coercive aspects. They don't understand the psychological manipulation. They don't understand the trauma bonding that happens with these survivors or these victims. So what's happening is, you have people that mean well and they've learned what the definition of trafficking is, but they don't really understand how this stuff works. That's what our app does. Our app puts you in a completely immersive, interactive experience so that you can understand, what does coercion feel like? What does psychological manipulation feel like? What is it? What kind of situation could you get into without it being any fault of your own and have that turn out to be something bad for you? So like you said, we did our first app was built up about sex trafficking, and our second app, we're still in development on it, is on labor trafficking. So it's like, what is labor trafficking? How could somebody come to America legally with a visa and then get tricked into becoming labor trafficked? It's a fascinating story of how people do this. It's a fascinating story about how people get coerced into it. We have counselors that use our app at their schools, and so they have four kids will come in. The kids put the headsets on, and the two counselors will be in the room with them. And what happens is, when the kids take the headset off, they realize, oh my gosh, you mean I can talk to you about divorce? Yeah. I can talk to you about STDs. I can talk to you about pregnancy. I can talk to you about physical abuse. I can talk to you about emotional abuse. And those counselors are like, yes, you can.
Please do.
Please. So the concept of somebody going through a story or reading a book or a movie before you go to a counseling session, that's called priming. So virtual reality priming, where you're actually living that story, is the most intense way that can come across. So we're actually developing one right now that's about divorce. So you find out, what Fantastic. Does it feel like to go through a divorce? Yeah. Are you going to stay with mom? Hey. Are you going to stay with dad? Which one's healthy? Which one's not healthy? So all the questions about going through a divorce that you can simulate inside of a virtual reality situation, you know, we're going to be trying to do that. And so you can put somebody in any type of emotional situation.
Yeah.
And go ahead. You probably have some more to respond.
I was going
to
say,
I can go on forever. You know,
even from the opposite side, Billy, like I did not know until I was smooth, fourth grade, something like that, the divorced family wasn't the norm.
Right.
So for
you know what you live, right?
Yeah. So for literally a counselor at a school to be able to hop into a kid's head whose parents are divorced, you know, gives them a different key to be able to unlock things and unlock that conversation and be able to open those doors gently.
Yeah, and you know, the thing, the school that's using our app this way, they explained to me that one of the problems that they had in their community was that a lot of their parents just weren't really great role models.
Yeah.
And so the children, that they're growing up in an environment with parents that really don't really quite get everything, they're not understanding how they can have those conversations with people at school. So he told me a story about how he had actually had one of his students had graduated. She got her GED and she was really proud. So she came back up to the school and she wanted him to give her a hug. And he was like, I can't give you a hug because I'm in a position of power over you.
That's right.
I'm an adult. What I can do is I could give you a hug, but we're going to have to sit down on a bench and I'm going to show you how to do a side hug. The fact that he gave her that side hug, she was floored. She was like, that's not how people hug. And so she, when she left, he was thinking, you know, hey, I did the right thing. That's cool. She came back 2 weeks later and she turned in multiple members of her family for child abuse because no one had ever shown her that her body was hers.
Yeah.
And she was supposed to have body autonomy. And so that the thing is that once people have words for these things and they've experienced them themselves in a safe way, they can actually start using that to build a better life for themselves. And that's exactly what these kids are doing with those counselors, because it opens the door. They're like, oh, it's okay to talk about sexual assault. I can talk to you about that. It's weird how you would think that with access to the internet and everything that people would have, have that kind of experience, but they don't.
No, no,
especially don't.
And and even the converse, even the open sexual and not sexual, but sexuality conversation with the child. And I remember the conversation with my wife, when we first had our child of, you know, what do we call it? And I'm like, you call it one thing. It's a penis.
Yeah.
It's nothing else. You don't have him identify it as anything else.
Anatomical names, it is, man.
Name, and that's what it is. And it's nothing to be ashamed of or use the name of. If he uses it in school, he's not going to get in trouble. And it's better that he know the name of it. So should something happen, he can define exactly what happened.
Statistically, that lowers abuse.
Exactly. Exactly. Because
so, like, you need to teach your kids those names as soon as they have.
Yeah.
Because when somebody doesn't know that area is not just an area, there are significant parts of it. It's like they don't say they touched my leg. They touched my lap. They say, no, this is they touched me in this exact place. And then something can be done about it.
Well, precisely.
Among other things.
But it's also one of those, you know, once again, you can't identify the problem until you're on a common ground. And we discuss this even in the world of paranormal. We discuss this regularly on the show. Fantastic that you're over here talking about this and researching this. Do you have the same nomenclature as a scientist in Japan and as a researcher in Japan on the same topic and a researcher in Italy? Or are you all calling it something different? You know, because once you start calling it the same thing, the data is going to change.
I wrote I read an enormous, not just a research paper, but a doctoral paper on child sexual abuse materials and the terms that people are using for that in the laws across the world. And it turns out that they are not using the same definition. They're not the same terms. And that is causing enormous problems of people trying to get help, because it's like if you're performing a study in one country, you could be, if you use the correct terms, you could add to a study that happened in this country. But instead, nope, both of these countries are pulled back because they're not using the same terms. And and the laws, when the laws are confusing and the laws don't make sense, you know, is something child abuse, sexual material, if it's at this age or that age, it really gets out of control.
Absolutely.
And so it's like we need to have, you know, not just a thesaurus, but I mean, a good definition and a glossary of where all these terms are and what they mean.
Well, and, you know, really, Billy, that is one of the things that sadly, but also beautifully came of the human trafficking laws, is the fact that that became an international definition. It wasn't like this is the law in California and Poughkeepsie. This is the law in Germany. This is the definition of it internationally.
It only started like 20 something years ago. The definition was, it went from what do you even call it, to human trafficking, with the advent of the Palermo Protocol.
Well, and that is a beautiful and amazing thing. And to know that we do not have that with even just child sexual abuse, which is, once again, a totally different topic, you know.
Right.
And you wonder, folks, how do you get into that victim love mentality, you know? And when you start looking at things like Stockholm Syndrome, stuff like that, the fact that people eventually begin identifying with their captors, you know, if you've ever horribly had any kind of physical abuse within your family and witnessed that even from a distance, where it's like, why don't they leave? You know
that question right there, Chris, I got to tell you, I think we have talked about this one time, but I can never say it enough. My wife and I, we've been doing this now for 9 years, if you can believe it, since 2016. And we went to a very large coalition, a Central Texas coalition meeting, and we listened to a story of two girls who were being trafficked by an older man. And we listened to every single person that was along the value chain to try to help them, from the social workers to the people that were helping them get clothes to the federal prosecutor. Not a one of those people could answer the question, why don't they just leave? That's what they would keep. They would keep asking that. We were like, well, they don't leave because this guy's coercing them. He has them. He has them psychologically manipulated. And nobody along that way had actually had any training that made them understand how this worked. And all Jackie and I were sitting in the room with that box that's sitting behind you. We had that box sitting on the table and we were just pointing at the box the entire time during the meeting. We're like, hey, this right here will teach you why they don't leave. That box right there, Chris. That box contains the answer to the question, why won't they leave?
It was a beautiful day. The day that you showed up with this box, Billy, I got chills. I got chills, quite literally, because it was the fact of the message had hit a different level, you know, and a beautiful level where you could literally put it in people's hands, not mail right them there. A computer. Something like that. But even now, the fact that y'all have a new program out there where it's like, go out and get it on Arbor XR, folks. If you
That's right. If you have an Oculus Quest, if you have one of those, Quest 1, 2, like Chris is holding a Quest 1, if you have a Quest 2 or a Quest 3, you go to arborxr.com and get that program installed on there, and then write me an email, and I will send you a link, and we will get you set up with Trapped on your headset. Try it out for 30 days, absolutely for free, no obligation whatsoever, and you will be able to see exactly what kind of training tool we're talking about. And we are looking for people that are trying, that have already been doing this kind of training, and you go into a room with a PowerPoint, and lo and behold, no one is really paying attention to a PowerPoint.
Yeah.
People are looking at their texts. They're embarrassed. They don't want to hear about sex. They don't want to. They don't want to listen to an adult. Kids don't listen to adults. Are you kidding me? They just don't. Kids love having a headset on that takes them to a different place. Nobody can see what they're looking at. Nobody can hear what it is that they're listening to. Mm-hmm. It's not embarrassing to them at all.
Yep.
It's not scary. It's not full of jump scares. It's just a story. Lisa tells you her story. That's all there is to it. It takes about 25 minutes to go through the whole thing, and you will understand how coercion works. You will understand how psychological manipulation works. You will understand how trauma bonding works in an interactive way that doesn't exist anywhere else on the planet. And I got something else to say about this.
Please.
Teaching people about this is traumatic. To get a room full of people to understand that you yourself may have lived experience and you are trying to get across this message that, hey, this could happen to anybody. You got a room full of people that are sitting there going, it would never happen to me. Never happen to my kids. My kids are too smart for that. I'm too smart for that. My grandparents are too smart for that kind of stuff. No, they're not. Anybody that's a human being that wants, just like everybody else, some attention and some affection are vulnerable. And that's what this thing teaches you. And it teaches it in 20 minutes. It's super easy. Once a kid takes that headset off, all of a sudden the person that's at the front of that room that's been trying to talk to them about it, they see them as an expert. They see them as somebody that they need to ask questions of. It changes the entire relationship of a trainer to have a room full of people take those headsets off.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. I mean, like, we're talking about, we go to these shows. I mean, and that's just not just for children. This is for adults. This is for elderly.
Exactly.
We had an 85-year-old guy take a headset off, and the first thing he said, he goes, I was molested by my uncle when I was a child, and I've never told anybody. I need to go get some help. It helped him find a way to reconcile what happened to him as a kid and have him realize, oh, my God, that wasn't my fault.
And it wasn't him. And it wasn't just him, you know?
That's right.
That there may have been others like him.
We've we have families that come to events and they go through the experience and they come, they're like, I don't know who my kids' friends are. I don't know what my kids are doing online. We have licensees all across America, and those licensees, they tell us story after story after story. They're like, they have kids that take the headset off. They go, you mean all those people on Snapchat? They may not be safe. They may not be my friends.
That's right.
No, that's right. Dude, those, you don't know who those people are. They could be anybody.
Yeah.
And it changes their entire lives. Their families come back the next year and they tell us all the things that they've done. It's amazing. I could not be more proud of this product. I could not be more excited about this product. I want to make more products like this. What we need is somebody that wants to train with VR headsets. If you are somebody that wants to go out and you want to do training with VR headsets, reach out to me through reefcares.org. I will set you up. If you want to try this thing, find me. Go to Arbor XR. Call me on my phone. It's 512-521-8874. You can find me easy. I'm all over the place. I want to help you train your family. I want to help you train your community. I want to help you train your law enforcement. I want to help you train healthcare providers. 88% of victims report that they go to the hospital and go see emergency room people while they are being trafficked, and nobody yep. asks them anything.
Yeah.
The people that work at the hospitals don't even know what coercion means. It seems unbelievable. I meet nurses, they finish their degree and they become a nurse, and the first time they hear about human trafficking is in their first annual re-up training, and they did a click through training on a website.
Yeah.
They are embarrassed. That's the ones that wind up coming to these coalition meetings. They're like, well, I'm in a coalition meeting because I've never even heard of trafficking, and I'm a nurse.
Well,
it's unbelievable.
And once again, that's just trafficking. There is a whole world with which you can apply this.
Trafficking is the bullseye of abuse, right? It's the bullseye absolutely. Of the abuse, you know, I don't know, what do you call it? Darts game, I suppose.
Yeah.
But it's like, we teach people, how does abuse happen?
Exactly.
How does abuse feel? It's like, how does it feel? And that's the thing that people don't understand, how it's important that you have an emotional avatar that you can actually feel this through.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to just be about trafficking.
It's
about anything.
No.
I mean, like, you may have elderly people in your family, and they may get an email thinking that they're going to be able to go put some money in to help a Nigerian prince. Or somebody that you know might be elderly, and they start dating somebody. That person yep. can get taken advantage of
absolutely.
By those people. I have friends that have lost $50,000.
That was one that I was just about to bring up. I remember a few years ago, my mom getting into something, and it almost happened where it was somebody saying that, hey, you know, I'm with the Houston Police Department. You know, looking for donations and all that kind of stuff. And it was like, no.
And then you got all the vocal stuff where they can do they can clone your voice. They only need a few seconds of your voice. And then all of a sudden your mom's getting a phone call saying, hey,
yeah.
Chris is in jail. You know, here he is. And then it has your voice. And he says, hey, you need to send $3,000 to this guy that's got my phone right now.
I got one, Billy, that literally JL Carpenter, if you are having issues legally in Houston, Texas, you call jlcarpenterlaw.com, everybody. She is hands down one of the best criminal defense attorneys in Houston, Texas. She's a good friend of the show. She's been on the show numerous times, but I called her. Like, I've known her since high school, and I called her and I was like, hey, if you have time, give me a call. Like, I got a phone call that got me to where I literally almost went to the location that they were talking about to pay them money, Billy. And what got me was the fact of, like, you know, I think that if I was part of a federal jury, I don't think they're going to come get me. That's not how they are going to, like, put a warrant out for my arrest if I miss jury duty, you know. Number two, I think I'd have heard something if I was on a federal jury.
it was
close enough that even my critical mind was like, I don't know about this. So I called my lawyer.
And good for you for having the sense to do that. I've had friends that have they've gotten phone calls, and it was like, it was their mom, actually. One mom got a phone call saying that her son was in jail, or that she got the call saying that her son was in jail, and then her son handed the phone over to the guy that was going to take the money.
Yeah.
And she wound up wiring that guy a whole bunch of cash.
Yeah.
I've had friends that had been called saying that their child had been kidnapped.
Yeah.
And so they walked into their kid's room, and they're like, I'm looking at my kid right here, so I'm pretty sure this is not my kid's voice. I mean, like the amount of stuff that technology can be done, the evil that can be done with technology is scary as hell. And people are not ready for it. I mean, you've got voice cloning, you've got LLMs, you've got chat bots, you've got Pegasus software that could be installed on your machine. They can scan through your social media. They can find out what your dog's name is. They could threaten. I mean, it's insane.
Yep. Yeah.
Parents don't realize what's happening when they give their little child a phone. I mean, having one of these things in your pocket doesn't mean that you have access to the internet. It means that the internet has access to you.
That's right.
If you want to give your child or give the internet access to your kid, you go right ahead and you buy your kid a cell phone. And you let that kid keep that cell phone 24 hours a day.
You know, I and you know my family, Billy. We're family.
Yes,
you've been to my house numerous times to be on the show. We are about as close friend family as you can get. The only difference is you were a little far away to be on the child pickup list.
Thank you so much.
But you would have been
happy to pick him up.
Had you been closer, you would have been. But here's the thing, like, you know, people tend to forget about these things. They tend not to think about these things. They tend to let them slip and slide by the wayside. And it's all too easy for us to lose our diligence on such things. I mean, hey, the only thing that clued into my mind that dude was utterly fake was I was like, you know what? This is getting really deep, really thick, really fast. Let me let my lawyer call you back, sir. What's your badge number?
Yeah. Yeah.
And he wouldn't give it to me. And I was like, it's going to be really hard for my like, I'm pretty sure at this point, if you're telling me they're going to come to my house, I'm pretty sure I can lawyer up. Like right now and tell you, no, you can talk to my lawyer today. So when she calls back, who does she need to talk to?
You know, it's funny that you say that because, I mean, you need to have something like ready to go, right?
Yeah.
So now, you know, first thing I'm going to say is give me your badge number. I want you to talk to my lawyer. But like if you're in a situation where, you know, you think that is that really my kid on the phone? You know, you need to have a safe word.
That's right.
I mean, it's like you need if I say banana, you need to say Volkswagen. You know, it's like you really need to know, is that really my family member there?
That's
something
right.
that they couldn't possibly guess through any other way. Because, I mean, the strength and the power of these LLMs, the strength and the power of these vocal programs, these cloning programs are scary, scary. I mean, like there are people now that are being and I know we talked about this a little bit before we got started, but. The what's happening is there are people that are being tricked into what they call sextortion, which is where you get somebody to trick them into sending a nude picture of themselves. And then what they do is that they use that as blackmail to get them to do something. So now there are apps that people are using, and those apps communicate back and forth with you, and they may send a nude to you partial nude. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to trick you into sending a full nude with your face
blackmail.
And your genitalia. And once they have that, then they blackmail you.
Well, and you know, years ago, and I need to have him back on. We used to have a former Secret Service agent on who ran the UT Center for Identity. He now works with the governor's office doing all kinds of stuff. Arshon McCleskey, amazing guy. He worked in the world of fraud in the Secret Service. And we had the conversation. This was back when I met you, bud, of at what point will we start seeing lawsuits from children the same way that our generation saw the emancipation lawsuits, you know, from child stars and things like that, where it was like mom and dad are still handling my money and I'm 20 years old. Mom and dad are reading my mail and I'm 16, you know, things like that. Those were the emancipation lawsuits we heard about, but it won't be long before we start hearing about emancipation lawsuits where it's like, mom and dad gave away my biometric data. Mom and dad gave away my facial print. Like, I have never once, and you've seen pictures of my kid on social media, I have never tied his name.
Yeah.
On social media. I've never allowed a comment that has his name. They're deleted immediately if they're there. And when people are like, why did you do that? I'm like, because I don't put my child's name on social media.
There's a concept now they call sharenting, which is basically you share all of your stuff so much that it's like crazy. But people can take that, you know, just kind of, I know you know this, but what they can do is they can take those images, so they can age those images. They can take
absolutely
the voice. And they can make it look like that person is 25, 30 years old in the future. I mean, like, there's so much that could be done. And if somebody is being, if their image is being used in a way that's embarrassing, they may want to sue parents for putting an embarrassing image up there that's gotten used. I mean, it's really crazy what people are doing with all these images out there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
then you've got all of the deep fake stuff that's going on. It's scary.
Well, and, you know, it really is the fact of we have to be aware of these things. We have to be able to teach people these things. And we have to be able to teach them in a way that, because all too often, yes, it's uncomfortable. Like, I used to teach sex and sexuality to 7th and 8th graders, you know. Right. And when you're talking, it's different when you're talking sex education as opposed to sexuality. Like, how do you deal with the way that society is going to push this topic on you? You know, and that's a different opening conversation that is a lot more empathic, where it's like you kind of understand the fact that as a 7th and 8th grader, you got a lot of big, deep questions that are starting to happen. And so you're available to a different realm of media that you weren't like 2 years ago, even a year ago. And that makes a big leap in what your expectations may be.
Well, one of the things that you can do to help your kids navigate all this stuff is you can actually tell your child that I am going to love you no matter what. I don't care if there are nude pictures of you on the internet. I am not going to think you're stupid. I'm not going to put you down. I am going to love you no matter what. Because if somebody doesn't have that understanding and they don't have that like right here in their heart, so they know for sure that their parents love them no matter what, those kids will get in a situation that if they are being sextorted, they will wind up killing themselves. There is a huge epidemic of children that are committing suicide because of these people that are actually utilizing those images online, and they will threaten to send them out to all of their friends.
Yeah, no, and there is a massive, massive part of that, and especially
if you are not armored with that understanding, what they can say is your dad is never going to love you because you did this. Your mom is not going to love you because of this. Those kids that have never heard that from their parents, they are in a worse condition than the ones that have.
Absolutely.
If you, as a parent, you want to armor your kid with as much love and unconditional love and support as you possibly can, because the people that are out here that are trying to do something to take advantage of your child, whether it's just for they want a PlayStation Network card or if they want all of the money in your parents' wallet or something worse than that, it's bad. I mean, and we have to keep telling our children that we know that the world is a dangerous place. The internet's a dangerous place. If something happened and a picture of you got out on the internet, I am going to love you no matter what.
Absolutely.
And these pictures don't have to be real even.
No,
they can
no.
be completely fake and deep fake. They can be deep fake videos, deep fake audio, deep fake images. And the kids need to know that you're going to love them. The world with all of this technology is a way more dangerous place.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's a much more nebulous place as well. I'm not going to say that it was ever black and white, because black and white's a pretty lame image and has very little detail. You know, you need the shades of gray to be there in order to actually see the detail in things. However, man, it's straight up the way the video is. It is 12K. Like, it's blinding now. the amount of possibilities that there are out there. And, you know, when you're talking about that stuff, especially the idea of the deep fake, especially the idea of, I mean, when people are like, how does that happen? Once again, take a good look at Nixium. You know, that is a prime example of not only what we were talking about, the idea of somebody stepping into the world of abuse, and it's through the guise of love and completion, you know, like this will help you attain the goal personally that you're trying to attain. We have the answer for you. We're here. Like, we have the path to success. Check out Jimmy over here. Jimmy's part of Nixium. He knows what it's about. He's wearing the sashes. He has sashes on the sashes and slashes on the sashes, you know? And the thing is, eventually it becomes the fact of, they started another level of Nixium that was even higher and closer to the leader. And what did you have to do that? You had to send us pictures.
You had to get, you had to send us pictures.
Pictures of yourself, like, naked and in compromising positions.
It's self-generated. You know, sexual,
and you've
abuse
done
material.
It to yourself now, which gives you even more guilt as to, oh my God, how could I have done that to myself? Which drives you even more to them, because they've got the answer as to why you did that to yourself.
Yeah, it's I've done so much research on all of this stuff about the ways that people abuse each other that it is really hard sometimes to wake up and have a smile on my face, because I know just how twisted the world is. So I look at the work that we do with Radical Empathy, and I know that we're making a difference. And so I just want to keep doing this. I want to keep making a difference out there. I know that I've shared with you that we have Native American groups that are actually using our software.
Yes.
And one of the reasons it's so powerful for them is that they are trying to stop the murdered and missing indigenous women, children, and peoples, because they are having a hard time keeping their people alive. And it turns out that one of the most dangerous times for them is between the ages of 12 and 18. So we have a group that we work with in Washington State. They've been using our VR for a long time. So we've been discussing with them making a specifically targeted Native American virtual reality application.
Fantastic.
And after discussing that now for about 2 years, they finally said, look, we think we know what it is that we really need. What we need is a way that we can give our children hope that they're going to survive between the ages of 12 and 18. So they're looking for a simulation that doesn't talk about human trafficking, doesn't talk about labor trafficking or sex trafficking, but something that actually makes them want to live.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. But what happens is if those kids get involved in sex, not just sex, but if they get involved in drugs, they get involved in narcotics, they get involved in fentanyl, they're gonna die.
Yeah.
The success rate is almost nil. And they said that traditional 30-day programs or any of the AA, NA programs, they just don't work. And so it's like, it's just a tragedy. And so we're working with them to try to come up with a way to create a grant so we can build them some type of VR hope simulator, you know, to show them that they are loved and they are cared for. So we're really excited about getting the opportunity to do that too. And again, it's taking the same concept of how do you put somebody in somebody else's shoes and teach them how things can feel.
Well,
you can see some of my, I started a Substack. I've got a ton of materials. It's called Beyond the Red Flags. Substack.com, and I've been putting stuff on there as well. So if you're a parent or you're a kid, you're interested in learning more about this stuff. I just did a piece on triangulation today, trying to get people to understand how triangulation works and how to recognize that if it's happening to you. So if somebody's trying to manipulate you using words and your emotions, you'll actually know a little bit of judo to recognize that that's happening.
Wow. And you know, that is really the most important thing, is that learning to recognize things, Billy, and learning to have the open mind enough to realize that it may be there, that it might just be there. And it's a horrible reality. Nobody wants to think about that. And I think that that is, of course, as we've had the conversation right here in the studio pre-show so many times, that is the horrible, horrible fact.
Yeah.
Is that nobody wants to acknowledge this because nobody wants to say that these horrors are there. It's kind of like I've reassured my wife and a few other people. Yes, there are horrible things in the news, you know, according to differing political views, things like that. But make no mistake, all this has done is peel back the fact for you folks that this is the exact same percentile of crazy that there's ever been. All right. Yeah. The only difference is you are more connected now. You're more connected than you were in 1990, you know, in 2000, in 2005, even in 2010 or 2020, we're more connected. We have more means of unfettered connection. And with that comes much more exposure to the, it's kind of like the drone situation where it's like, hey, everybody, guess what? We have a gaping hole in our detection systems over spots. And then we start seeing drones and people are like, my God, look at all those drones. And then there's news stories. Yeah. Hey, there are drones in the sky and more people are looking up. And now they know what a drone looks like.
Do you want to shoot them down over, you know, over these, populated areas?
Yeah.
What if they're full of gasoline? What's that going to do?
No, they're full of lithium, Billy. They're full.
How are you going to deal?
You don't need gasoline. They're full of lithium. You can't even put that out.
That's right. You can't put that out. Let's try to put out a Tesla when it catches on fire.
So, yeah, it's one of those, yes, you're seeing more drones because you've been told that there are more drones and now you know what a drone looks like. So sadly and horribly, folks, whenever you find out what human trafficking is and you find out the difference between human trafficking and smuggling and a coyote and things like that, you will come to find out there's a whole lot more human trafficking than you ever, ever thought. And it's horrifying.
And it's so bad because this isn't just happening like down the street with those daggum dirty people that do these kind of things. I mean, it's like this is parents are doing this to their children. Once the Sackler family got everybody addicted to opioids, they couldn't get those opioids, so they started doing heroin and meth. And well, when they couldn't get their heroin and meth and the money to do it, they just started selling their children to their drug dealers.
Yeah.
So they're trafficking their children constantly all across America.
Well,
and it's crazy beyond, what's really happening.
Beyond that, even the idea of, once again, it doesn't have to be human trafficking. You could talk labor trafficking and you don't have to talk about people in the back of a warehouse or something like that. You can talk about it straight up in your local graphic arts department. Folks, you could talk it straight up in your local corporation that is not paying. Here's the thing.
I'm an intern and I'm doing free work.
If you are not getting
illegal, dude, you cannot do that.
If they are not accredited with your university and you are not getting actual credit for a class, pass, fail, or credits toward a degree or class or training or certification at your school.
They call it an apprenticeship.
Yeah, so that is – nope.
You need to be working under an apprenticeship.
Nope.
Not an internship. An internship is illegal and it is labor trafficking. Apprenticeship that's legal, there's tons of paperwork.
And even then, it should be slightly paid. You should be compensated by something.
Yeah, you should be compensated for an apprenticeship too. This is it. You don't get to do free work.
That's right. That's right. Even if you go in as an apprentice plumber, you are getting a rate to be there for the day. It may not be the same as a journeyman or something like that. You know, same as an apprentice electrician. You'll be getting paid the $9 an hour wage, but you'll be getting paid and you'll also be getting knowledge to further yourself in the industry.
Yeah,
but if you aren't getting paid,
I can tell you that in the,
let your
in
red
the
flags
industry,
fly up, kids.
I was trafficked in the game industry and they used the word passion.
Yeah.
They were like, we're looking for people with passion. And what that really meant was that you'll just work without me even asking you to work 7 days a week, 16 hours a day. You'll sleep in your office and you'll do it because you love it. I can't tell you how much passion I got labor trafficked out of throughout my career.
Yeah. Passion and pizza.
Passion, pizza. Yeah. And some Pepsi or whatever.
Yeah.
Let's keep the
going. The three P's.
It was absolutely ridiculous. And people do that constantly. There's people still in the game industry. They They don't want to hire you unless they feel like you have passion.
Absolutely. And I'm like,
put that in a box, man. What does that passion mean? That passion means that you can take advantage of me.
That means I'm going to bust hump no matter what the pay is.
I'm going to blacklist you in the industry if you don't do all this stuff. I mean, like, the number of people that have been trafficked in the video game industry, the music industry, the movie industry, the animation industry, it goes on and on. And
absolutely,
you can't say anything because guess what? You'll never work in the industry again.
That's right. That's right. And that's quite literally what the DID is up against right now. And he may not have enough lotion to slide out of it, Billy, This is the horrible, horrible fact of, despite anything with that may have happened with minors, and I'm not laughing about things
now,
happening
who is
with
this?
Minors.
The DID?
The Diddy.
Diddy.
Oh, Diddy.
Diddy. I love the fact that your wife knows more about that than you.
thank you so much. I appreciate that.
But the fact that he made promises to people about records.
On camera constantly telling you exactly how he traffics women, that he traffics them. And this guy runs free and he's on television and people are promoting him. I'm like going, this guy is a human trafficker. I could be putting the action, means, purpose on screen. Yeah. When he says them, he's like, this is exactly how I traffic these girls. And I'm like, what the hell is going on? And of course, how many people from Epstein's list have gone to jail or even gone to court?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
You don't hear any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at all the farmers right now that are without workers in their fields because they're afraid they're going to get deported. Do you think those people have their papers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's embarrassing. This entire country, in fact, the entire world economy is essentially built on labor trafficking. You know, if you have a battery in anything that you own that is recycled,
yep,
it has cobalt inside of it. And if you would like to do any research at all, just go right ahead and you just type in cobalt and then add the phrase artisanal mining to it.
Yeah.
Artisanal mining means that children pick the cobalt out of the ground with their hands. This radioactive, cancer-causing material,
yeah,
that's in everybody's everything. So we're all involved.
Yeah, it's pretty Temple of Doom status. It really is. You know, just the idea. Same thing. We're all guilty, folks.
Yeah,
we're all holding lithium in our hands every single day. Most of that does not come via an ethical means, either through strip mining or through use of local.
Do you know where this cotton came from that's in my clothing?
Yeah.
I don't. And you know why I don't? Because they take all the cotton that's picked by slaves and they mix it in with all the rest of the cotton. And they are laundering the cotton, essentially, before it gets to us. They do the same thing with the cobalt. They do the same thing with everything else. Where do you think who do you think is doing a lot of the food production? Where do you think McDonald's clothing comes from in America? Where do you think Starbucks uniforms come from? That stuff is made in American prisons. There's entire websites that show you exactly how many companies are utilizing American prison labor. And that's labor trafficking, bros and gals.
Yeah.
Everywhere you look, America and our world economy is built on labor trafficking. Sorry, it just is. And the media scares you with the term human trafficking, so you don't even know what it means. They won't explain what the hell it means on television. Anyway,
what
I'm saying, though, is we got a tool that will teach you how to avoid abuse and to recognize it happening to you. It's ready now. It works flawlessly. Contact me at reefcares.org. I will sort you out. We will get you set up so you can have your Oculus Quest running our game, Trapped, a VR detective story, and you can train as many people as you want so that you can get your entire community, all your staff, your legislators, your law enforcement, you name it, we'll get them taught. We teach bankers. We teach children. We teach elderly. We teach everywhere in the United States. We want to teach your staff. We want to teach your students. We want to teach your family how to recognize abuse so they know that they are being tricked so they can get help.
Yeah. Well, and so that they can learn to identify somebody that may need help. You know, that's really the biggest thing.
I think my boyfriend is trying to take advantage of me. Yeah. I feel like this guy's unhealthy. Well, if Absolutely. You don't have a sample of what that feels like, how are you going to know that?
Yeah.
And that's what we're finding, is that a lot of children just don't have anybody modeling this behavior so they can actually understand what it is that's happening.
Well, and that's just it. You know, these are all uncomfortable. I don't think I've ever had a fully comfortable evening of conversation with you, Billy Joe Kane, whenever we've been on air.
And I haven't even said anything.
Love you, lady.
That's right.
But in all sincerity, because we get into these deep, hard topics, man, and we get into this, and it's not pretty, and it's the seedy underbelly of humanity.
It's terrible. I've written so many blogs on this. I've read so many blogs. I've gone to so many classes on this stuff. I know that I have been psychologically injured, because vicarious trauma in your brain is extremely real.
Absolutely.
So, I've heard these stories, and my brain feels like they happened to me. Well, so I can rattle off.
That's
story
because
after
you're
story.
Empathetic. That's because you're empathetic, Billy. And that's the thing. That's the beauty of not only ReefCares.org, but of your software and of the training that VR helps to provide, is that it helps you understand what the other person is feeling. And at that person, at that point, you don't have to have the uncomfortable conversation. They don't have to have the uncomfortable conversation. You can learn by their body language. You can learn by things that they're saying and by the way that they approach situations.
Teachers avoid that trauma.
Exactly.
So a teacher that is utilizing this in a classroom, they are not having to suffer through this trauma themselves.
Well, that is one of, honestly, even whenever we talk to UAPPD, man, that is a group of, and I should hook you up with them for their stuff, because that is a group that deals with experiencers that are first responders to scenes where people have had paranormal experiences and that kind of stuff. And how do you use your skills as a detective and as an actual police officer to ask these non-confrontational questions? To open a point of investigation. How do you as somebody ask non-confrontational questions? It doesn't shut an abuse victim down, but rather opens them up.
De-escalation and understanding abuse and trauma responses, those are huge. And you have to have that as a first responder. You've got to be ready for anything.
Exactly. And to be able to teach that kind of empathy, to be able to get people, even teachers, to understand how to ask these questions without literally an emotional slap to the face of asking the direct question, you know, that kind of stuff, because it's hard.
I know you've had many, many, many life experiences, and I've had some friends that have been policemen, and some of them had stayed in for a long, long time, and they were able to handle a lot of abuse and trauma that they saw. And some stayed in longer than they should have. And I've had friends that they were like, I went to my second car accident and I'm done. I cannot do this.
Yeah.
Just can't take it.
Absolutely.
So it's like, I mean, we have to find ways to help people deal with this trauma, and we got to get them safe ways that they can learn about it. And one of those ways to do it is to build a VR experience that is not going to hurt them, and it's going to include all of the learning objectives that it is that they need to actually walk away from. And that's part of the trick of designing these experiences, is sitting down with somebody and saying, what are the things that somebody needs to walk away from this experience remembering and learning, and what are the things that are myths that we need to dispel? And we can do that for any experience. We can do it for any emotion. We can do it for any situation. We're prepared right now to build any type of VR app that anybody wants. So if somebody out there is looking for something like that, they want some type of training, we can put it together. We work with you for months to make sure that we understand what those learning objectives are. We build a script that works around those things, that we build the models for everything, put it together, and put you in the shoes of somebody so you can actually learn that stuff.
Billy, let's talk privately this week.
All right. That sounds good.
something beyond what I mentioned at the beginning. That's much, much larger. So yeah, let's definitely chat. I always get the tingles whenever we talk because there are so many amazing, amazing applications to this.
Well,
Billy,
you know we can do it because you've seen
I know.
What happens to people at conferences. You see what happens to people in your family that go through these things. They get it.
Absolutely.
You put them in a situation, their brain thinks it's real.
Yeah.
It's an experience just like it really happened to them, and they remember it just like it really happened.
That's right. That's right. And it's amazing what you have done over the last time that I have known you. And it has to have been a decade now. Almost.
It is. It'll be a decade.
I'd have to look it up.
When we started.
Yeah. So, wow. And to see the exciting places that you've come and the changes that you've made and the huge strides of building communities around this and helping communities with this. It's so beautiful. And I'm always excited to hear where you guys are taking it. Let everybody know where they can go to.
You want to see our stuff, go to reefcares.org. That is short for Radical Empathy Education Foundation. Cares, R-E-E-F-C-A-R-E-S, right there where he's highlighting it. Go to reefcares.org. That's where you can find everything. If you want to take a look at our blog, it is beyondtheredflags.substack. I don't know if you're going to find it on there. Yeah, I haven't updated it with a new one, but that's where you can go read all this stuff. Yeah, that's one of the new ones. See where it says Beyond the Red Flags? That's it. That's the newest one that I put up there just a little while ago. But that's our new Substack, man, and I love it. Jackie
Fantastic.
And I have been writing some stuff on that. We have been doing so much research on all kinds of abuse, all kinds of abuse prevention. It doesn't have to be all about trafficking. We're trying to teach people about any kind of abuse, family abuse, psychological abuse. Somebody just trying to trick you out of your money, trying to trick elderly people out of their money. People need to know that that unfortunately the world is not the safest place, and we're here to try to help.
That's right. Absolutely. And we are here to help you. Shout out from the mountaintops, as always, my man, because it is a beautiful, beautiful mission that you have, and we have made it one of our missions here to try and stop these horrors from happening in the world and to try and build empathy across communities, man, because we have sadly lost that light in a lot of means of our society. So thank you for helping build those bridges. And we are always here to support you and help you in any way we can, brother.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your time tonight, my friend. Take care. Love to the family, and Godspeed in everything as always. I will be in touch about that project.
Hey, we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely.
Bye,
take care,
come
man.
Visit us.
All right.
See ya.
Man. Billy Joe Kane, everybody, it is always a pleasure talking with him. While you are online following all of his work over at Radical Empathy Education Foundation at reefcares.org. Don't forget to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That is where you can find all of our episodes. That is where you can also find our link to the Symposium of the Strange. Curious Events puts that on every other month in San Antonio. And this upcoming month, we have remote viewing with Greg Redabaugh coming up April 23rd. That is the next show. So it's going to be fantastic. Stop on by, get your tickets at symposiumofthestrange.com, folks. When we come back from this quick commercial break, we will be joined by our good friend Jason McLean. We'll be talking about portals, not only of the electromagnetic type, but the type that change communities, the way that communities change around this topic, how it came to be, how these things have affected communities. So we'll be talking about that and more with Jason McLean right after this.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the field observation and encounter log from Curious Research, You can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for staying through that quick commercial break. Also, thank you so much to Billy Joe Kane. It's always a great conversation with him, talking about the world of virtual reality and empathy building. Empathy building is a huge, huge point on this show when it comes to not only society, but research and experiencers, things like that. So the idea of using virtual reality to help build empathy for people who are human trafficked, for people who have gone through abuse, things like that, so that you can identify them and better give them help is absolutely fascinating to me. Our guest in this segment is Jason McLean. He has been around for years. He is the author of Metroplex Monsters, a book on cryptids in the Metroplex area of Dallas-Fort Worth. He is the host of Siru Papers. He is also one of the founders of the coming Crossing Realms Conference in Richmond, Missouri, that is coming up on the 19th of December. Welcome back to the show, Jason McLean. How are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great, Chris.
Fantastic. It's been a while since we've had you on. I remember the last time we had you on, we were live on location. You're always great to chat with there. And when we chatted with you last, we were talking about paranormal. We were talking about the way that paranormal is researched and the idea. We always have great conversations with you about the idea of the Kleenex bin of paranormal and the idea that, you know, unfortunately, so many researchers, capital R scientific researchers, stray away from these topics because of the catch-all Kleenex bin aspect, the idea that there's a, you know, science likes to categorize and describe things, and there's a thousand different products out there called facial tissue with different structures, different plies, things like that. That's what science is about. But if you just call it Kleenex, they may just walk away because there's no differentiation there amongst what kind of Kleenex. Even amongst the brand Kleenex, there's different kinds. So, you know, how do you define these things? How do we build that language? And how do we really get to a point where internationally these things are communicable? You know, because it gets hard. It gets hard when you're talking about a literally different language. Are we speaking the same thing, and are we speaking the same thing scientifically? And that brings us to our topic for tonight, which is paranormal portals, portals and the paranormal, you know, and even the idea of portal, you know, you think that Sasquatch or something like that might be a term that might be confused because of cultures, but portal itself and the idea of a portal is another one that, you know, it's a pretty broad term. And it's also one, you know, what kind of portal are we talking about when it comes to Bigfoot walk through a portal or, you know, something like that?
Yeah, no, again, always great to be on, Chris. I love the show. I love, you're my favorite host because you have a Johnny Five maquette in the back, for those who haven't seen it. But yeah, to your point, the word portal can mean so many different things, and it's a concept, because most people say, oh, you mean something like out of Stargate or Rick and Morty, or Sliders, all the shows that people think about. But it's like, well, first of all, are you talking about the doors of a basilica? Right? Can we at least? It's like that word means something. The problem is each context can be very, very different. Or portholes, as Tex would say, over in Texas Front Porch. So let's actually take a quick step back and even say, what is it that we actually think a portal is? Because this is where I think we're, in many cases, on the whole question of Kleenex, right? Let's go back to your Kleenex metaphor for a quick second. If I'm calling something a Kleenex and I hand you, like, a piece of paper towel, right?
Yeah.
It's like, those are two radically different things, and yet they're still kind of the same group of family. The problem is, when we say portal, I think the problem is that with a lot of terms that we use, we're actually multiple steps down the line of concepts, and we're working on this, but we actually haven't built a bridge there.
Yeah.
The only thing that a portal really can mean is a doorway to someplace else. Right? That's literally where the word came from, right? It literally does come from the basilica, but it's going from one world or one place to the next. The problem is we don't even know how to define that next place.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of assumptions about what these things are, how they operate. And allow me to, again, this next statement is not in judgment of anyone at all. Please.
No.
I'm not here.
No.
I'm a non-drama llama over here, right?
We have no judgment on this show.
We both know that's not true.
Not on the show. Never on air.
Yeah, get a couple of Mai Tais in him. It's a different situation.
Off air with Mai Tais is a different story.
It's entirely different. But yeah, so like, I hate when we use Star Trek language for things, right? And what I mean by that is, in the 60s, they were photon torpedoes, which makes no sense. It's just photon was a science word that Gene Roddenberry had access to, and most people didn't know what that was. So he just called it a photon torpedo. Same thing happened in the 90s. All of a sudden, well, we'll just call them quantum torpedoes now. That's the next. They just grabbed a word from science, threw it out there.
Yeah.
And if you think about it for 30 seconds, none of that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it was a way of saying, here's some techno babble to make you feel better. There's amazing things going on with quantum science right now. All that's, quantum physics, it's amazing work. But guess what, guys? Most of the people in this field can't do the math or the physics involved in that.
Sure.
We're taking even the principles that people discuss, non-localized reality, quantum entanglement, things like that. That's a very superficial pop culture level of understanding of quantum physics.
Yeah.
We need to sort of stop trying to cram sci-fi words in or Star Trek words into this research and just say, hold on, what do we actually know? What are we actually observing? And then start working backwards from that. I think the problem is we're several steps down a line here without actually having built that bridge appropriately. And I think it's really skewing our understanding of what reality is or how we can even address this. In many ways, it's probably akin to this. We need to start thinking more along the lines of just the data first instead of trying to interpret the data and putting down interpretations. We need to do things like, just collect data with your field observation encounter log 2024 edition.
You're more shameless than me, and that's why I like having you on.
Curious Realms.
But in all actuality, I mean, that's part of the reason why I made it. That's literally part of the reason why I made it, is because I had friends that were out doing this stuff. And when I would hear sometimes about the way they were doing it, it's like, wow, we went all night without you stopping and writing that down. When it happened to you, that's fascinating to me. Even the idea, and we've talked about it on the show before, the idea of preparing yourself for an investigation, like honing your knife of investigation with listening to stories and cases about where you're going to investigate. That's that that that's a little more like, you know, let me find some rust that I can put on my knife real quick to make sure it, you know, gets proper before I go out in the field. Like, it's kind of a backward way of looking at things, because all you're doing at that point is kind of polishing the filter through which you're going to view your data, you know?
No, exactly. And that's, and so what we need to do is maybe is honestly take it back a notch and say, well, hold on. What do we actually see? Because, again, I have plenty of stories of people saying, I saw this through a thermal. And they'll say, and it went through a portal. Okay, well, hold on. You don't actually know that it was a portal it went through. You just saw something happen. Because here's the problem. The word portal, at least in our common parlance, indicates that there is another world or another realm or another dimension that has been, that some, that something has walked through, it is now in a different place.
That's right.
That may not be what you're seeing happen.
Yeah.
I've used this idea for a while, but it's like we are working under the assumption that our level of technology actually allows us to understand the world that we live in objectively. And the problem is, and particularly when it comes to the paranormal, we may not. Right?
Yeah.
I think we've talked about this in the show. If you show me an EM meter, and it's like, well, hey, it went off. Okay, great. Here's the problem. You can't tell me. I'm not saying that's not important data. Please understand. Take your EM, your KT, your, all of those. Take everything. I want people with Geiger counters running around. We need, because we're finding, people are finding legit anomalous radiation spikes. I want everything out in the field properly working, because at some point we'll be able to figure it out. But here's the thing. Right now, you can't tell me, are you measuring the presence of an entity?
That's right.
Are you measuring the wake? Like, are you measuring the waves of, like, say, something walking through water? It creates waves. Are you just measuring the waves and not the direct entity? Or is the entity just straight jacking with you?
Yeah. No, precisely. And you know, like, to your point, like, here on the store for Curious Research is an actual tri-field meter.
Yeah.
Where it's like, here's actual readings, and it will tell you whether you're in the magnetic spectrum, electromagnetic spectrum, what size of it, whether you're weighted or not. You know, have you put a weighted standard on there to allow for a noise floor? Things like that. Yeah. You know, because when you've just got an EMF meter that goes from green to red.
Yeah.
That
doesn't tell you anything.
That doesn't give you actual data like the one that's on screen right here, where it gives you readings and tells you what side of the spectrum it lies on, things like that. There's a massive difference there. You know, and there was one video that I saw not too long ago in a group that we both belong to, where this guy was at a haunted location with his meter down. And, you know, look, there's nothing going on. And as he got closer, it started going off. And it's like, yeah, you're filming it with a camera.
Yeah,
it's as you the get camera, closer dude. With the electromagnetic field, it will go off. You're filming it on a cell phone. You're getting you're getting a cell phone signal closer to it.
Yes. Well, and here's the other thing. It may be that there are random EM fields and radiation spikes for reasons we don't fully understand. And that's what you're measuring. And by the way, it may be that those radiation spikes and those EM fields are creating sensations that would then lead people to think places are haunted, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is a much more complicated question than people are giving it credit for in a lot of cases. We need to dial back a lot of things and say, okay, well, hold on, what are we actually seeing? Because I'm all about, what does Shelley call it? Citizen science, right?
Yeah.
Again, I'm the first one to say most true breakthroughs are done by citizen scientists.
Yep.
Period. End of story. It's the citizen scientist finds the artifact. They make the discovery, and then it's institutions that come along later and process
confirm
that and confirm it. And they think, but it's the citizen scientist that's going to make these breakthroughs initially.
Shoemaker Levy, prime example.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we do need to do better work, and we need to have these understandings. And so when it comes to portals specifically, it's like, guys, you're making an assumption as to what that thing actually is that you're seeing through it. Because what if reality isn't the way we think it is?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
something I've said for a while now. You go back in time 600 years and you tell people the reason you get sick or the reason food spoils is because there's little animals so small you can't see.
Yeah. Floating in your water. You
yeah. They had no concept. There was no concept of things too small to see.
Yeah.
Because the microscope hadn't been developed yet. We may be waiting for the development of some technology that allows us to go, oh, holy crap. Reality is entirely different from what we thought it
is. That's right.
In which case, that may not be a portal per se. It may be something else entirely that's not necessarily on the table yet.
Well, and, you know, absolutely. Absolutely to that. And one of the things that I've brought up pretty regularly lately that you and I have talked about is that mm-hmm. concept of specifically Bigfoot and portal, things yeah. like that. You know, and once again, I will say it as I always say it preemptively. I am a believer that there is a large hominid creature known as Sasquatch or other roaming the woods of North America and beyond. Mm-hmm. However, I believe that there is also something else. And yeah. even if you're talking about Bigfoot itself and forgetting the something else, there is a possibility out there of Bigfoot using mm-hmm. infrasound. You know, the idea of infrasound being used the same way that elephants use infrasound, whales yeah. use infrasound, things like that. You can't hear an elephant's call that's infrasound, but an elephant can hear it 10 miles away. You know,
exactly.
Lions talk through infrasound as they hunt, things like that. Yep. And when you start considering that, when you could start considering the fact that, yes, our human hearing hears from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, but there's a magical frequency one hertz below that, 19 yeah. hertz, known as the, quote, paranormal frequency to people who make binaural beat music, therapy music. It's normally one that you try to avoid because it gives you the feeling that something is in the room with you, watching you, that eyes yeah. are on you, that you are not alone. It is also it's a frequency of fear, normally overwhelms yep. you with fear, things like that. But it's also the frequency at which the water in your eye begins to vibrate and distortions begin to happen. Optical illusions begin to happen. And, you know, once again, it's only one hertz below where we hear. Yep. So it's not like it'd be incredibly hard. And it's mm-hmm. a great example of how your body picks up frequencies that you do not yes. hear or see. And a fascinating mm-hmm. one to me that ties into that, that I just posted because the article literally just came out like a month or so ago out of Live Science, was the actual shape of a photon.
Oh, yeah.
Was photographed for the first time ever. And when you look at it, not only is it oddly, oddly very reminiscent of the way things look from the inside of your eye, but it's also yes. very reminiscent of a portal. So
yes.
when you start talking about the fact of your eye begins to vibrate at that frequency. If you begin to see a photon for what it is at that moment, or if your eyes begin to vibrate to where that's mm-hmm. what shows up, then, yeah, you may well say, like, I saw a portal, because you would see yeah. that over the reality of the world around you. You would see it at the mm-hmm. same time.
Yeah. And so this is – and there's a history of this in science. The belief that there were canals on Mars
yep.
is literally because I forget the astronomer's name.
Percival Lowell.
Thank you. I'm terrible with names. But yeah, he was essentially seeing the veins in his own eye.
Yeah.
Or the blood vessels in his own eye. And so there is a point where in history is full of these kinds of things where it's like, oh, okay. It's not that they were lying or making anything up, but they just didn't understand what they were actually seeing. And sometimes we need to understand our own preconceptions can even shape how we see things. So like That's you right. said, there may be something else going on here where you're seeing you may actually be seeing your own eye.
Yep.
But let me take one other step here, because, again, you and I are in agreement on this. I think there's a very small population of hominoids roaming around North America, probably some other places. I think it's proper to call them Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever. I think there's another phenomena, a paranormal phenomena, that we are yep. calling Bigfoot, or wants us, or maybe it actually wants us to think it's Bigfoot, whichever it is, yeah. right? Is sort of irrelevant for this part of the conversation. But the problem is all this is going to the same box. I would submit that if you see things going in and out of a portal, and let's assume for a second that there is, because it's like the story came out of Skinwalker Ranch, right? They were seeing this on some sort of night vision where like it looked like a hole opened up and something crawled out and walked out. Allow me to submit that whatever that was, assuming it's a true story, sure. Right? I'll give it the benefit of the doubt.
Yep.
Because I've heard other similar accounts. It's like, well, what makes you think that if you were there, that you would have seen a Sasquatch walk out of that? What if it's not a physical thing that's crawling out of that hole, but rather it's something that wants us to have assumptions about it? It's hiding its true nature. The entire event, right? The entire portal event could literally be a staged event for us. We are dealing with, when you deal with the paranormal, you're dealing with phenomena that has very clearly, on many occasions, gone out of its way to hide its true identity, that manipulates what you see in order to achieve whatever goals that paranormal entity or encounter wants to derive. We tend to think, well, if I'm seeing it, then it's real. There's no reason to think that at all when you're dealing with something that may not have a form in our own reality. In fact, you may not be seeing anything. It may be something more akin to a religious event. John Keel famously said, if we could objectively observe UFO abductions, would we see, you know, a UFO and someone being taken up on a ship, or would we see someone in the middle of like a transcendental event where there's just, they're in a trance? And here's the thing. What if we have multiple phenomena going on here. So sometimes it's little green men. I don't, you know, that's a conversation for another time. Sometimes it's the U.S. military, and other times it is a paranormal or supernatural event.
Yeah.
And it is like a trance. We, again, since we can't objectively observe this, we don't know. But we need to remember that when you're out there dealing with creatures or beings or entities or fields or whatever you want to say that has an intelligence behind it and has the ability to manipulate your understanding and your perception, then your perception is irrelevant.
Yeah.
You're only seeing what it wants you to see.
Yeah.
And that is something we have to keep in mind. I'm not saying that these aren't valid. What I'm saying is we need to maybe back off our, instead of writing down
a hard definition like that.
A hard definition, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's write down what we see and observe. That's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
We need to do that. But the problem is we're jotting down interpretations of the data and not the data itself.
Yes.
And I think it's muddying the water in ways that it's holding us back.
It kicks up a lot. And, you know, you and I have specifically had the conversation regularly on the show about the idea and the dangerous part of all of this, which is the want of confirmation married with cognitive dissonance. The idea of you believe something so wholeheartedly and so deeply that you are looking for acceptance of that belief and confirmation of that belief from other people who believe the same. And that when presented, this is the cognitive dissonance part, folks, when presented evidence to the contrary and data to the contrary, you refuse to take it into your data set. Mm-hmm. And that's where things get dangerous. That's where, you know, you get into, no, it's not drones, it's something else. And it's like, okay, but it's pretty explainable as drones.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just it. You know, like even with the plane crash and helicopter crash that happened recently, like we just talked with Mike Turber. Literally, the reason we had Mike Turber on the show was to talk about that and the drones and the idea of chasing the tail of a story without waiting for facts to come in and how dangerous that is. How dangerous that is, because even as a major news corporation, it means you are not waiting for the facts to come in. You're trying to create a narrative that creates clicks, that brings people to you so that you sell more ad space or what have you. And the problem is that's not actually news. That's not actually news. That's like pseudo nonfiction.
It's propaganda.
It's not quite fiction.
Is what it is.
It's not quite fiction. But yeah, it is definitely on ends of a form of propaganda, because you are using facts the way you see fit and cherry picking them so that things fit your dialogue. And the problem is, when you've come up with a dialogue within 2 hours of an incident happening, there is no way that you have any room for truth tomorrow when facts come out. All you can do is change your story to match the facts at hand.
Yes, I have said for years the first 24 to 48 hours of any story is always wrong.
Yeah.
Always wrong.
Yeah.
And the simple fact of the matter is, let's just say to everyone has a story where there is something that happened and you were there, and you hear somebody else who wasn't there talk about it later, and you're like, that didn't happen, I was there. And that person is convinced that they know the truth of what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And you're like, I was there. And I've had people say, no, you weren't. I was there. Like, what are you talking about? Right? It's this is a problem across all fields, all the time. This is not unique to our little niche, niche of the universe.
It's a part of human psychology.
Exactly. But that being said, we need to be aware of it so we can do better science. Because here's the deal.
That's right.
I'll sit here and say, you know, if you kind of take this step back and you look, you start to notice, you do notice patterns. The way things look, that's not always the same, but there's a lot of behaviors that are the same. There's a lot of overlap. It's like, well, hey, that's really interesting data. Right. And that's something that we need to sort of parse out. But the problem is we're having to sort of discover the data in the interpretations that's going down on paper.
Yeah.
If we just had the data to work from, we could probably be a little bit further ahead. I think we'd probably actually know what Bigfoot was if we didn't have people. And again, let me throw shade on all sides on this one.
Yes, please. Evenly.
For decades, the flesh and blood community, because that was the only form of Bigfoot that was accepted, there were stories and tons of accounts that were wiped free of all of the high strangeness, right? They were cleansed. And on the same side, the people who see Bigfoot as exclusively a paranormal phenomena, we have them reaching out and sort of cleaning off information about what people saw that would lend not to a paranormal version of it, or omitting facts. Like, I've had people say, I saw Bigfoot that was over here and it was doing this, and it's very clearly a high strange event. And I said, okay, what does it look like? And like, well, it has antlers and hooves. What?
Yeah,
that's not a Bigfoot. Like, that's clearly something else, but it's not a Bigfoot.
Yeah,
right. And so it's you start having, or yeah, it's, I went out Bigfoot hunting, right, and I just didn't see anything, but I came home and it's knocking on my door and running away. Right, like, we have to be able to say, well, hold on, let's look at what the data is. And you know what? If someone's got a Bigfoot story and there's elements of high strangeness, we need that information in there, because it may not be Bigfoot. Yeah. Now, let me now sort of counter my own interpretation of the data. It may be Dr. Bertram talks about. It may be that Bigfoot is a paranormal entity, but when it becomes physical, it also becomes organic.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Because I think we tend to think that if something's paranormal and becomes physical, it's like a light hologram from Star Trek or something.
Yeah.
It may be that it just actually becomes flesh and blood. It becomes organic. And then when it stops being organic, it goes back to being supernatural. So that could explain the data both ways, right? Easily. But the thing is, we don't know which way we're dealing with on this, because we don't even know what events are actually paranormal and what events are actually physical. Because the data has been scrubbed on both sides. It's been cherry picked on both sides. And we've lost 40 freaking years, probably 60 years at this point, of data.
Yeah.
And we're having to kind of take a step back. I, again, it's been a little while. It's been a few years since I wrote that book. looking back, there are stories that I would have that felt supernatural. But I'm like, well, but the place, the location, the stories are consistent with a Bigfoot, with what I knew of Bigfoot at the time. And it's like, well, now looking back, I'm like, maybe that wasn't. Yes, it may be in the same area as people who've seen what would clearly be a physical being, but some of these stories don't fit.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the things I even discussed in the book is like the Goat Man of White Rock, Lake. You move far enough away from the lake, the thing loses its goat man esque appearance. So we may, again, back to the previous comment. Hey, this thing doesn't always, this stuff doesn't always look the same to everyone. It is it's either deliberately manipulating its form, or our assumptions about it manipulate its form.
Well,
right?
And even our cultural assumptions,
understanding, yeah,
change it. You know, and a prime example of that, we just had Ryan Edwards on talking mm-hmm. about Gugwey, and as that came up, Wendigo came up, you know, yeah. And when you look at traditional description of Wendigo and what causes Wendigo, things like that,
yes.
It is not a deer-shaped thing with antlers.
Nope.
That is,
it is not.
What has happened to it, you know, yeah. And when you talk about the Anglicization of things as Anglos move into the area, as other settlers move into mm-hmm. the area, you know, it's one of those that even whenever you're talking Sasquatch, even whenever you're talking Dogman, even whenever you're talking Gugwey, those mm-hmm. are all originally really native things that Anglo has now come into and kind of changed a bit, you know. And yep. you look at stuff like Creepypasta, you know, Slenderman, mm-hmm. the Rake, that kind of stuff that were fully there and only there, and now suddenly they're everywhere and there are sightings, you know.
Exactly.
So you have to wonder, because as we talk about mm-hmm. on the show regularly, our brains are pattern generating machines. They want to live mm-hmm. in a pattern, and they will gladly substitute something that you are familiar with to make you comfortable. They'll do that yes. for you all day long, all day. They do it with words. That's why you mishear things, all kinds of stuff, folks.
Yep. Exactly.
And one of the other issues that we're dealing with amongst these things, Jason, besides the nomenclature and mm-hmm. and the understanding amongst stuff, is the reticence of sharing research. I will
yes.
honk this horn all day long that you can be
honk
upset.
Away.
Because you know just as many people in the communities that I do that will not trust science. They will not trust mainstream science. I'm not going to give my data to science because they're, you know. Well, here's the thing. You have a problem there. Because scientists sometimes don't share their data with other scientists because they're afraid the work will be taken away or that the funding will be given yep. to somebody else, you know. I went to college. And when I went to college, and my friends were in microbiology and things like that, and competing to go to Chapel Hill for a mm-hmm. for a master's degree, things like that. Believe you me, I mean, in college, people were sabotaging experiments. This was college. So when you're yeah. talking about this happens in the world of mainstream science, where people sabotage each other's work,
mm-hmm.
or take somebody else's concept and build upon it in a different experiment, you know, in order to get it. Like, that just happens on your way to graduate school, much less once you've got federal funding or once you've got grant money, things like that. So you wonder why researchers are tight-lipped and don't share things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get into it in the cryptid community or the paranormal community, and it's even more rampant, sadly yep. enough. You know, because yeah. all of these things are still burgeoning stuff, and none of it's fact yet, as far as like being able to say, like, I'm an expert, like yeah. I'm a physicist. Well, sure, because physics is a science, you know, but you can't be you can be a cryptozoologist because that's actually actively a part of zoology, you know. But
yeah.
but even to say like I'm a Bigfoot expert, that's a little hard because, well, we don't have an actual specimen of Bigfoot to be yeah. an expert on, biologically, things like that.
It's like, what are you an expert technically in? Are you just a folklore expert? Yeah. Because that's legit. Like, but the problem is, that's not really what's happening here, because you're not looking at it from a folklore perspective. By the way, again, everyone's like, why do you trust science? I don't trust anybody. We're not supposed to. Yeah. We're not over here, like, Chris and I are not, trust me, we are not saying mainstream science is wonderful and always gets everything right. Nope. Did you just hear what he said?
Yeah. It changes. It's supposed to change. Otherwise, it's doctrine.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Again, here's the problem. You know what? There's an old saying, science advances at the gravesite.
That's right.
That's it.
That's right.
Because unfortunately, the people who are in the establishment right now, they've got the money, they've got the power, they've got the influence, and you come on like, hey, I have this data that shows you're wrong. They're not going to want to believe it because, like, no, I'm. Yeah. Again, you have ego, and then you also have to show and you have to prove that this idea is right. So we are not over here saying that mainstream science is the way to go, or that's the one. It's the most wonderful thing on earth. What we're saying is, we need to be better, because if we're going to kick in the door, we have to have the information. We have to show that we have an argument to make. And the problem is, folklore is valuable. Folklore is absolutely a part of what we're doing here.
Yes.
That's what...
It's where it starts.
We can't get rid of that.
Yeah.
But we need to understand what folklore is, what it isn't,
and what we can actually through get which from it comes. It. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, hey, once again, on the front of that book is the scientific method. And that's what I say anytime I speak live is, make no mistake, the world of the paranormal and science begin on the same step, experience and observation. And I notice you have a signed copy. That's even classier.
Yes. Of my handy-dandy field observation and encounter log, 2024 edition, available from Curious Research on Amazon.com, and I'm certain a thousand other places, because this man is a promotion whore, and I love him for it.
Well, it's just the fact of that's where it all begins.
Yeah.
Whether and when you've had a paranormal experience, the science has begun. The question is whether or not you bought a ticket to the train or you let it leave the station without you. That's the only difference. The science has already begun because you had an encounter and an experience, and you had an observation during that. So from there, you gather more data. You come up with mental experiments and form hypotheses, and then you pass that data across somebody else like yourself. And then they go, well, you know, I don't know about this method through which you gathered the data, but let's take a look at the hypothesis. You know,
is it falsifiable? Right.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you how many fields of science that are accepted science where you look deeply into it. Again, you see it more in like textual criticism and things like that, where it's like, oh, so it's not falsifiable. This is just a belief system that's pretending to be science in a lot of ways. So, again, we're not seeing the praises of the mainstream. What we are saying, though, is, there's no reason why we shouldn't be there if we do it right.
That's right.
And we can, because I'm in this field because I do think this all matters. Like, at the end of the day, what Bigfoot is fundamentally irrelevant to me, but I think it's one of those things where once you have that piece and you put it where it belongs, you're going to understand the picture a lot better.
That's right.
And that's because we're all links in a chain. Science is just a tool of human growth and development, and we are all links in this chain. We may never understand what this phenomena is, but if we do the job right, it may be that subsequential generations can figure it out.
Sure.
Because it was because we laid a foundation that allowed them to move forward. That's what we were supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be planting trees in whose shade we will never sit.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true in life, and it's true in paranormal research. And so we're not over here saying portals. I'm not saying a portal doesn't exist.
Absolutely. Portals definitely exist. I had it up. I'll bring it back up on screen right now where portals exist. Because it's an actual thing. Where'd it go? Where'd my...
Oh, the basilica. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, not the basilicas.
Okay.
But hold on. Electromagnetic portal.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's actually a part of science.
Yeah, it is.
I'm a huge, huge fan of, you know, astronomy. And that is a temporary connection between the sun and the earth. And we have we have proven the fact that there are superhighways amongst our galaxy, amongst other parts of the universe, where these things are connected via slipstream, that kind of stuff. And yeah, it happens through plasmas and that kind of stuff, where there are high energy fields of, once again, high energy vibration going on. That kind of stuff that create this. So the idea of, you know, somewhere like a Skinwalker Ranch, somewhere like even a Blind Frog Ranch, who we just had on. We just had James Keenan on. And the idea that you have water, which if you know anything about electricity, if you know a little bit about water, you understand the fact that, like, even water flowing through a metal pipe, even through a plastic pipe, will carry a charge. Because of the nature of water and the friction going on. So when you talk about water traveling through limestone, when you talk about water traveling through malachite, things that are copper bearing minerals under the ground there on Blind Frog Ranch, and then you marry that to a massive meteor impact site with a more than usual amount of iridium, and then the fact that because of the impact site, you've got magnetized earth that's been crunched up and wrinkled, and the magnetic shift of it is different than the magnetic shift around the rest of it. You add those three things up, and you're talking about, you know, energies flowing through a layer of iridium into a magnetic anomaly, you know. So you could end up with all kinds of things. You could end up with all kinds of weird, strange just resonances that change the way that matter reacts, that change the way that, you know, things operate in the visible spectrum and world around us.
It could be. So, again, this goes back to the earlier, you know, comment about the, you know, the K2 meter. It could be that when we're in the field, our brains are things being manipulated.
That's right.
Right. So it's like we don't really know what the answer here is yet. So we shouldn't get rid of any concepts at first. But here's the thing. What if, again, we assume the portal is the thing is moving from point A to point B. What if it's just clicking off? Now, again, I wear my religion on my sleeve. I'm a Christian. I don't believe in simulation theory, but I like it as a metaphor.
Absolutely.
Because I think it's a great metaphor, because what if it's not again, our concept is this three-dimensional reality. It may be that when people say, I saw this thing move into what we saw as a portal, that may not be what's actually happening. It may just be that it's essentially metaphorically saying clicking offline, and you're just seeing it return to its proper
reset.
Realm of existence. Yeah, it's like we may not be seeing what we think we're seeing.
That's right.
And that's the main thing here. We're not saying portals don't exist. What we're saying is there's a lot of assumptions. And unfortunately, what that does is now people are looking for portals, and you start getting pictures of, I'm sorry, things where it's just water on a lens, right? I had several friends send me this one video, and I'm like, it's clearly water on a lens. Or remember the Russian spiral from a few years ago, where it's like, no, that was just a booster in the upper atmosphere it was a multi-stage rocket, and it was just spiraling out because, again, the part that it released the later stage, and so it's burning itself out. That's all it was doing. If you know anything about rockets, you've seen it.
That's right.
Again, I'm a science nerd, space nerd, love space. I've seen lots of rocket, when we used to have the space shuttles go up, right? At a certain point in the atmosphere, it's so thin, it just, you see the fumes flare out. I can't tell you how often I hear people say, oh, it's a portal. It's a portal to something else. It's like, no, it's not. That's
a secondary stage.
Yeah, exactly. So the problem is you're training your brain to look for something that you don't necessarily understand. It may not even be a thing, but because it's in your head, you're going to see it. As an artist, my entire life is designed around understanding how people see things and manipulating how you see things.
Yes.
Absolutely. My entire life as an artist is trying to figure out how to make you see something, because I love minimalism. with as little information as possible, I can still make you, you'll look and say, oh, well, that's a guy holding a sword or whatever, right?
Yep.
Or Spider-Man. Great. But I've put down as little information as possible, and your brain has put that together because you're like, it's a piece of art or it's a comic book or whatever. Your brain is primed to understand it as such.
Yeah.
That works out into the real world and when we're doing real research that matters. So, again, we're here because this stuff matters. I think that once, again, whatever these phenomena turn out to be, they are pieces of a puzzle that allow us to understand the world we live in better, and that's the goal.
Well, and, you know, you bring up a hugely massive point, and that's the point of patterns. You know, one of my one of my favorite experiments with psychology and subliminal psychology is the gorilla experiment.
Oh, yes.
Where you see four guys passing a passing a red ball in white jerseys, you know, and they're passing and passing and passing. And you're told, like, count the number of passes. How many passes happen in this 1 minute of video? And then suddenly a gorilla walks through and dances and then walks out of the frame. And it's like, how many passes were there? And you count the passes, and then it's like, did you see the gorilla? And almost two-thirds of people never see the gorilla. Ever. They never see the gorilla. And a prime example of that is the substitutive images that you see out there where letters are removed and numbers are put in their place. You know, and my brain decodes that like immediately. It sees it as nothing different. But not every brain does. One out of every three cannot make sense out of that.
Yes. Well, and let me tell you a story that actually happened personally in my life, right?
Please.
By the way, the whole gorilla thing, now that you're primed to see it, you will see the gorilla if you go and look up the video because you're primed to see it now. You can't not see it. But I had a friend, grew up with him, great guy. I lived in the same – I grew up in the same house until I was like 18, you know, went off to college and all that. My dad's house, I lived there my whole life. He and I, we were friends from birth. Our parents knew each other. So he was at my house frequently, right?
Sure.
He knew the house as well as I did. I think it was my 16th or 17th birthday. I was having him over. I was having people over. We were doing stuff. And this man, who is like a year older than I am, who has... Again, nothing in this kitchen had changed. Like, there were some remodels, but there was this little chandelier. It's not really a chandelier. For those of you who are old enough, you remember the 70s, you had the chain light that came down and had the, you know, the, that's
the
what it was.
The four or five arms with a candle on it.
Well, no, it wasn't even candle. That. It was like the, it was like, not really stained glass, like the glass was clear or sort of foggy.
Yeah.
But it was lined and came down. Yeah. So it's just a thing that you had over the dinner table, right? Anyone growing up in the 70s and 80s knows what I'm talking about. Like I said, 16, 17, and I have the cake set up and, you know, we're doing stuff. And he goes, hey, when did you get that chandelier? That had been there since before I was born.
Yeah.
He had interacted with that thing in the past. Not like directly, but like he's been in that kitchen.
He sat and eat dinner. Yeah.
And yet it was as if it had just been put in for him. He literally never saw it. Now, that's just how we are. We see things. Guys, you know what I'm telling you. You're like, honey, I can't find X. And she's like, it's right here. And seemingly she pulls it out of the friggin' ether, right? And the same thing happens, you know, ladies, your husband's like, it's right there, and you can't see it. Our human perception isn't a video camera.
Yeah.
It assumes
a lot.
It fills
in most of the blanks, oddly enough. Two-thirds of the blanks that will gladly fill in. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the thing. You don't see anything. Your brain is literally making up what you see based on experience, which is why if you see something you've never seen before, you actually don't see it.
Yeah.
You have to say, there's plenty of times when go online, there's experiments where they'll show you a picture and you're like, I have no idea what this is. And then they'll tell you it's a cow or it's a guy in a hat. And your brain, boom. And you're like, oh, well, there's the cow.
Yeah.
right? It just, the brain, your brain is literally manufacturing the data that comes in. It's translating it into something. This is why optical illusions work.
Yes.
This is how art works. This is how magic illusions work. Is that it's playing off of the fact that you don't actually see anything.
Right.
So, yeah, exactly. So you take that out into the field. It's just as bad. We just have to be cognizant that this is the thing.
That's right.
As long as we're aware of it, as long as we're cognizant of it, and we are following the appropriate scientific processes, we have a chance of collecting data that matters, that will allow us in the future
a whole lot
to actually maybe start answering some of these questions. Because I'm sorry, it may be that some of my sacred cows in this field will get gored.
Absolutely, but that's science.
And that's fine.
That's science. You can't be. There's a term in science and in lab work called killing your darlings.
Yes.
And you've got to be willing to kill your darlings. That means, folks, that even if it's your hypothesis, if your lab partner pokes enough holes in that hypothesis that the balloon falls out of the air, you let the balloon fall and you start over with the same data and you go for another hypothesis. And, you know, it's one of those that, once again, we have to be willing to accept what's there. And I'm gonna post a few pictures real quick. To kind of explain this and to explain the fact of, like, you've got to be willing to accept what's there. Like, here's a great image, beautiful image of a large golden orb with purple inside, a sharp, crisp edge there that you can see. Now, given no data, you could assume this is an orb. Could assume it's a plasmoid, all kinds of things. What it actually is the light from the planet Venus about 3-4 nights ago from the time of this recording, when it was actively closest to Earth than it will be during the recent planetary alignment in February. So that is a typical artifact from an extraordinarily bright light, folks. Doesn't matter how good your camera is, but if you are pointing directly at a bright light and trying to focus on that, and it's far enough away, that will be the result. That's the result of it. Doesn't matter how good your camera is.
To think, Chris.
And you know, like, here's an example. Here's one that I took in focus of the planet Jupiter and its moons. You know, so it's nice. Like you can focus on things that are outside of the atmosphere pretty rapidly. This photo was taken within 30 seconds. You know, so you don't have to be amazing. Like, I've got much better pictures of Jupiter than this. This is one that I took, you know, just like as a test shot not too long ago. But one of the things I'm about to show you, the videos, is where things get fascinating, and the way that things move, the way that, you know, if you look at it, and once again, if you're told absolutely no data, if you're told no scientific data about this video, which is a multicolored orb, undulating, moving across the screen from upper left to lower right, things like that, given no data other than I filmed this in my backyard. It could be construed as all kinds of things. What it actively is the plant is the dog star Sirius out of focus in a telescope that is not locked on to the star. So you're looking at a star through an exaggerated 8-inch telescope. So you're seeing the actual rotation of the Earth is what's making the star move. It's not the star's motion. It's the rotation of the Earth exaggerated by the lens of the telescope. And once again, a bright out-of-focus object, one of the brightest stars in the sky, Sirius, that's known to undulate colors, change colors, things like that. And then to get one even better, here's one that has things moving around, all kinds of stuff. One that is very, very plasmoid in its way. And the big black hole that you see in the middle of that is the actual front reflecting mirror on the telescope, folks. That's what you're looking at. And the rest of it is quite literally the planet Venus. The planet Venus, once again. And moving because the telescope is not tracking. It has no tracking on it at that point. I was using things as a 3-point convergence to line up the telescope, you know, and once I'm on a target, I'll lock it. But But that's the way that things naturally move through stuff. Those are the way that bright objects actually look. Mm-hmm. To and a lot of that is some of that is sensors on cameras. A lot of people don't realize, especially on your cell phone, that there is algorithmic software inside your phone to try to fix your shaky hand.
Yes.
Things like that.
Straight up, this is not a camera. This is a phone. The camera that's on it is designed for selfies or maybe even, oh, here's a nice, big scene. This is not a camera. If you go out into the field, invest in a camera. I just bought one. I'm taking it out into the field. Get a real camera. Learn how to use it. Yeah. Practice before you go out into the field. Because you may get the shot or the video that matters. You really might. One of my great frustrations is that I've seen several videos and pictures that I think would be very, very useful. I have to be very vague here. But the people who took them cannot release them for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, when certain phenomena are finally accepted by science, I guarantee you we will have dozens, if not hundreds, of photos and videos that are very, very clear of things like Bigfoot and other phenomena that they're like, look, I didn't want to ruin my life with this one photograph because no matter how good that photograph is, it's not always going to necessarily be the thing that allows us to say, boom, here it is.
That's right. King Gerhard says that regularly on this show and whenever he speaks. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a photo or a video that proves Bigfoot. It will be biological evidence.
It'll have to be. But that being said, there is still good evidence and data that can be pulled from videos and photographs. And so we still need you to go out with an actual camera because if you're using this, can't actually trust the images that you get on it at a distance.
Yeah.
Particularly if you're doing let me
zoom
make it
in.
Bigger with it. Yeah. That's not a zoom. It's not an op. It's actually an algorithm that's adding data.
That's right. It's a digital zoom, which is not an actual lensing or geared lens. It's one of those. It's the way that it's made to receive and transceive information, Jason. And it's the same way as the article that I popped up earlier. Your brain is not a computer. It's a transducer. It's there receiving signals, sending signals all day long to the world around it and from the world around it. And it's only going to base those signals and the reception of those signals based on past experience, and that's the example that I typically give whenever I speak of the phrase that I've always heard as a kid and even as an editor, a picture is worth 1,000 words. No, a picture is worth 1,000 words to somebody that's been in the same circumstance.
Yeah,
because you show a picture of a wedding to a 4-year-old that's never been to a wedding, and you have to explain what's going on. Yeah. Other than that, it's just a picture of some people in a place. Okay. So without the 1,000 words that picture is, quote, worth, that kid has zero frame of reference as to what that is. And when you bring a picture taken in the middle of the woods to a scientist without, or even a proper researcher or investigator without more data, that's all you have. If you don't have the 1,000 words of how it was taken, what the conditions of taking the picture were, things like that, then you've got a picture. You've got a picture. And your experience speaks for itself because it changed you, and nobody is doubting that experience. That's just it. The solving what's in the red circle doesn't remove your experience or the way it catalyzed and changed you. And looking at those circles doesn't mean you're not a scientist. It means you're a better scientist. Yeah. So we've got to build these bridges from the portals on both ends, quite literally.
Exactly. No, exactly. So when you're out in the field and you're taking your pictures that you will put a red circle around, make certain you have your handy dandy field observation and counter log from Curious Research available at Amazon. Real quick, going back to your pictures of Venus and other lights, this is something, again, as an artist, I'm aware of that a lot of people aren't, and it comes up all the time in ufology, which is when you have a light, a bright enough light that's out of focus, it'll look like a donut. like a donut of light.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you in fact, there are videos out there that are put out by big name researchers where it's like the video is like, well, here's this donut shaped thing. And there's an actual hole. You know, it looks like there's a donut hole in the middle. And you're like, that's just a light that's out of focus. That's all that is.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not aware of, again, this is why it's not just it's not just walking in with assumptions. You have to understand how technology works.
Yeah.
You understand what happens when you play with your cameras. What does it do? Because the problem is you may get data, but if it's out of focus enough, it may be giving you the wrong data.
That's right. That's right. You may have inadvertently altered the data by misusing the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever you use equipment like the like the stuff that we had up on screen earlier that has screens and everything else, the question is, do you know how to take a baseline reading?
Yeah.
It's great that you've got the equipment that can give you the reading, but do you know what the reading means?
Correct.
A baseline of background radiation is for not only electromagnetic, mm-hmm. but for radiative things like delta and gamma radiation, that kind of stuff.
Well, again, where are you? What's the composition of the ground? Because, again, radiation's everywhere, folks.
That's right.
It exists in nature.
And the example I typically give is that whenever I go out to a property for a targeted individual to scan their property for high-end Wi-Fi signals, high-end 6G, things like that, you know, high-G signals, low-G signals, that kind of stuff, it surprises many people, but also gives a lot of comfort to the families that I start pulling out other instrumentation first, that I start with, like, let's start off with a radon detector. Let's go through your property with a radon detector. Let's make sure, you know, that you don't have a fault line. Like we'll go through with my actual Geiger counter and get levels and things like that to make sure you don't have some kind of fault line radiation coming up. We're going to go through with a gas meter and make sure you don't have a gas leak in the house.
And yes.
Once we're through with all of the known quantitatives that could be inside of your house, now we're going to spend an hour and we're going to set up all the high RF equipment and we're going to start scanning bands and we're going to start looking at that. But if we find a couple of things that are here that may explain what's going on, we're going to put those feathers in our hat. And we're definitely going to consider those. And you as the person who is being victimized, even if by these things unbeknownst to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Needs to put those in your hat as well.
And that's something I think we need to I'm going to come back to a thought I had earlier, but I want to put a pin in really what you're talking about, because this is really, really important. Just because something isn't a Bigfoot or something isn't a ghost or something isn't a, you know, fill in the blank, it doesn't mean that person is not having an encounter or an experience.
That's right.
But it may not be the experience you want. If it's like, well, it's not really a Bigfoot, so I don't care, or you're not trying to get rid of these other things, you're not actually helping anybody.
Yeah.
You know, again, if someone's hot if someone's house is wired incorrectly, it can create hot spots and those electromagnetic fields, again, as we've mentioned, that can manipulate your brain. It makes you think that something's going on when it's not.
Yep.
You can have, again, like you said, at 19 decibels, or not decibels, megahertz, crap goes weird. There could be a machine in your house where something's misaligned, and it's generating that frequency. There's 1,000 things that can plague a human being and torment them, and it's not paranormal in the least.
That's right.
But we would assume it is, because we don't necessarily see. We can't see the electromagnetic field. We can't see the ultra low vibration. We can't see any of that. Yeah. We can't see the gas.
That's right.
It's not enough to kill them, but maybe enough to create a hallucination every once in a while.
Sure.
Right. It's like just because it's not necessarily something paranormal doesn't mean it's not tormenting this person. And it's not that this person did anything wrong. They're just a victim of a circumstance. And if you come prepared with your handy dandy field observation. But again, and with experience and an open mind, you may solve a problem that they didn't even know that they had.
That's right. That's right.
And that's valuable because you're helping your fellow man. It's like, does it get you any closer to understanding Bigfoot? No. But guess what? Even if we did, we could wave a magic wand tomorrow and we knew what Bigfoot was and what the paranormal, you knew all those things. Great. You know what changes about your life? Maybe what your hobbies are, but doesn't change your actual life. Doesn't change anyone else's life necessarily.
Yeah.
Helping each other is why we're here. And if here's the worst part of all of this. It may be in doing things like sampling radon.
Yeah.
You know, checking EM fields. We may actually come across something that wasn't even on our radar at all.
That's right. That's right.
There could be components to all of this that we have no idea exists, but it's going to come up because somebody's got the right equipment at the right place at the right time, and they're going to catch something, and it's going to blow open an entirely new field of understanding.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's how science works. That's how humans work. That's how history has worked.
Yeah. Yeah. So and that's just it. You know, we've got to be willing to. Hey. I loved Pluto too, all right, but it's not on my kid's planetary map.
Oh, don't break my heart.
It's.
I know.
It's changed because science marches forward and science changes. You know,
it is.
And definitions of planets and planetesimals came about and planetoids and things like that. So Pluto, because of its rougher shape, got reallotted in its familyhood.
And we probably should. And again, I will happily and in good spirits, because again, I love astronomy. I'll always sit there and side with Pluto. But at the same time, I understand why the decision was made. It's in many ways, it's basically just a giant comet. It's not really solid mass. The vast majority of it is ice. It is frozen. Like it's not a planetoid that has ice on it. It's basically all ice. This is basically just a giant comet in a weird orbit.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it is.
It's close enough to the sun to have a tail.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, but here's the thing, though. And I think this goes, and I think this is underlying an even bigger point of all this. The language we use determines how we view things. If, for you, a planet is only an object in the cosmos that circles the sun or orbits the sun exclusively, has a large enough gravitational mass to have a spherical shape, and is large enough to capture other smaller objects, then you could make the argument that Pluto is a planet. However, if you're like, well, hold on, that includes other things that really shouldn't be considered a planet.
That's right.
You're like, well, hold on, we need to rethink about what this means. Then, yeah, that's when Pluto kind of gets kicked out. But we're going to call it a planetoid. That's fine, right? But the problem is, we have to start understanding the language, again, needs to be refined. Right. Those words need to be. And this goes back to something we talked about at the beginning. It's the Kleenex problem.
Well, and portal. What is portal? What is portal?
What does it mean? Yeah. It's like... Yeah. If portal only means something that leads from that allows something to move from one place to another place, maybe that's a functional enough term. The problem is we're using it on things that we don't actually know that that's what it's doing.
Yeah.
We don't know that that's actually what's happening. And so it's leading in this, it's creating an assumption and an interpretation of the data that is not actually validated yet.
That's right. That's
because
right.
We don't know what's happening when people see a thing in a thermal and it's like, well, I saw this thing and then there's this, it looks like this thing opens and it moves into it. Maybe it is a portal, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's something that's not even on our radar right now.
Yeah.
And if you call it a portal, you've created linguistically a box that this event is now in.
That's right. That's right. Which restricts it. Possibly from future opportunity for research, things like that. And we do have to be careful as these phenomena occur, as these things pop up, you know, how we define them, how we look at them, and how we categorize them, even within the communities, you know, because how we categorize them will be how science treats them, you know. And science, as much as I hate to tell you folks, science is as pretty much cold and unfeeling as you can get. It really doesn't care how you feel. It cares about the data. And if you have decided to categorize it in this way, then they have no need for further categorization from where it is, because the categorization's done and you've got your mind made up. So why does science need to be involved? And they will move on to the next topic, you know? Yep. And that's just it. We have to be as willing to have an open mind as we are asking science to.
Yes.
You know?
And here, that's the thing. We cannot fall victim to our own hypocrisy. We can't sit here and chastise science for not being open to these other possibilities if we're not open to the possibilities ourselves. If we're not open to the possibility that maybe people didn't see something, maybe it was something, some other event. Maybe it is radon. Maybe it is a radioactive or an EM field spike that due to phenomena we're unfamiliar with, but people thought they saw something because it was messing with their heads.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a real event. It really happened to them, but maybe that's not what they saw. Or maybe there is a thing out there in the forest, but it isn't what you want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got to be open to that too, or you're actually worse than the scientist who's not willing to look into it. You're worse because you're accusing them of not being open minded when you've already shut your brain down.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
It's the worst form of hypocrisy.
Yeah, precisely, Jason. This is why I love having you on, man. You are utterly common sense about these things. I love our conversations. I love where they go and the way that they always come back home. So thank you so much for your time tonight, man. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you, man. Again, I love the show, you know, and I'm always happy. You're great. I love the conversations we have here. And I mean, because here's the thing. This is the conversations that's actually going to move things forward.
That's right.
I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't. If I was black-pilled on all this, I've talked with Texas 100 times. I'm like, look, I'm 30 seconds away on any given day saying, you know what? It's all paranormal. It's all supernatural. I'm done. Right.
Yeah.
Prove me wrong. And just leave.
Yeah.
But I don't because I do believe that we can come to understanding. I think there's value in doing the hard thing, as Kennedy once said.
Yeah.
And that this is what citizen science is, and that we can put these puzzles together.
That's right.
I'm here for that. This is what matters. And this is one of those shows that actually allows for those kinds of conversations, which is why I love it.
Well,
plus, you're really, really hot. And, you know, I love spending time with hot guys.
Thank you. It's the red hair.
It is.
So speaking of conversations and speaking of important conversations and varied conversations, you were actually one of the organizers behind the Crossing Realms conference that is coming up in Richmond, Missouri. Give us a little bit about that. Give us a little flavor of what the show's going to be. It's a 2-day show.
Tons of stuff.
Tell us a little bit about it.
We've got, again, I'm the guy who's been making the posters and stuff, so allow me to scream into the void is how many people we keep adding to this. We have so many speakers and special guests I keep having to add to the poster. I'm like, please stop. It's too much awesome. It's not just a meet and greet on Friday night. We've got several speakers that evening. And then we have speakers throughout the day. We have special guests who are showing. We have special guests who would be speakers at other conferences. It's going to be great. You can interact with everyone. Dr. Dean Bertram, he's going to be bringing his documentary he's working on, The Man Who Invented Flying Saucers. He's got the short for that. He's going to be bringing it. You've got Lady Anne Celine, who's going to be awesome. She's speaking with Ronald Murphy. And again, you know, Ken Gerhardt's going to be a special guest. You can poke him with the stick, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. Like, we got so many people there. Josh Hurd. Again, I'm going to be there. That's all you need to know, man.
I'll be there.
You'll be there. And again, our buddy Ryan Edwards is going to be there. You'll be there doing your thing. Ryan Edwards is going to be there. Brent Thomas is going to be there.
Yeah.
And there's so many more, right? Again, you can see the screen. Go buy your tickets, man. Go buy your tickets. This is awesome. It's going to be one big party. There's going to be so many people there speaking. You're going to learn so much. You can interact with everything. This is the entire idea. We didn't want to have just Bigfoot or Dogman or UFOs.
Yeah.
It's all of it. And the UFO stuff that's going to be there is going to be varied. Like I said, Dr. Dean Bertram, who is, again, the only person in the, on the planet that has an actual PhD in the realm of ufology, meaning actually within the realm of ufology, he's going to be presenting some information and data that isn't on anybody's radar half the time when it comes to the history of the UFO phenomena. So this is a can't miss opportunity to just go and hang out with some awesome people. And also he just hear stories and hear theories and event and descriptions of phenomena from different points of view and different perspectives that may start putting things together in a way that you're very unfamiliar with.
That's right. And you know, being open to people's experiences, being open to their ideas, hearing them firsthand, that kind of stuff. Once again, the community at these things is what it's all about. The speakers are fantastic, but quite honestly, the community and talking with people, hearing stories, swapping experiences, that's what it's about. Because once again, that's where the science starts, you know, that's where wheels get turning, things like that. Let everybody know where they can go to find out more information about the Crossing Realms Conference, where they can go to get their tickets, Jason.
You know, if I had been a smarter person, I'd have that written down. there's the Crossing Realms Conference on Facebook. You can do that. Or, again, you can go to we have the links everywhere on Eventbrite for the Crossing Realms Conference. And if you go to places like Texas Front Porch on YouTube, the Blondes and Booze, Bigfoot Michigan Rob, Paranormal Paul, or I think his is technically Our Paranormal World. They've got everything there. And yes, when Ciru Papers, which is returning with new episodes at the end of February, I will have links there on my page as well.
Can't
or you
wait.
Just find me on YouTube or on Facebook. I'm there. I will have links in my Facebook page.
That's right.
As well for that, because I gotta get out there and hustle these things too, or I'm going to get yelled at.
Amen to that. Well, Jason, thank you so much for hustling to be on the show tonight. Greatly appreciate your conversation as always. Hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience.
No problem, man.
While you are online, checking out all of the amazing recent work of Jason McLean and the rest of the team at the Crossing Realms Conference, you can find tickets on Eventbrite, everybody. Like he said, you can find tickets on Blondes and Booze. You can find them on Bigfoot Michigan Rob. All kinds of other folks will have links up to that on social media. We will have links to it on our website as well. And of course, while you're online checking out things from the Crossing Realms Conference, make sure to stop on by CuriousRealm.com. That is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That's where you can find episodes. That's where you can find the videos channel, which has all of the YouTube channels of our guests and people like Blondes and Booze, stuff like that. Texas Front Porch is on there. All of the video channels of our guests are on there for you to like, follow, and subscribe, including Jason's old show, Jason McLean Questions Everything. And of course, while you're online checking out Curious Realm, don't forget curiousresearch.org/store is where you can go to buy not only your own personal grip of paranormal investigation gear, thermal cameras, things like that, great instrumentation, but also your copy of the encounter log. If you are an investigator in the world of paranormal, cryptozoology, UFOs, UAPs, the field observation and encounter log is your back pocket companion to keeping your data in a scientific way so that it's ready to shake hands with science come the day that you need to do so. Because it's that conversation that matters. It's the conversation that you have with other people about your experience that matters. And it's your willingness to have the conversation that moves humanity forward, folks. And without that, we just stay where we're at. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services. CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media and Aftermath Media family of podcasts. For more great shows and members-only content, visit aftermath.media today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.